Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com. Welcome, everyone. My guest today is Chris McEntee, Vice President of Product and Corporate Development at ICE Mortgage Technology, to talk about the current state of digital adoption as seen in the use of eNotes and what the next stage of adoption might look like. This episode is brought to you by our podcast sponsor, Vesta. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, Sarah. I appreciate it.
No, really excited to talk about, you know, the state of digital adoption and kind of like what you see from your post there at ICE, like how you measure that, where we are as an industry and how you look at that. So maybe talk us through a little bit about when you look at eNotes and what that means for the larger picture of digital adoption.
Yeah. Well, I think the way we view the eNote is it's such a critical part of a loan and a loan package. And the MERS eRegistry really tracks the authoritative copy. And not to get into details, but it makes sense, right? In a digital world, you can have n number of copies of a digital instrument. At MERS, you have the ability to be able to track which one is the one that's actionable, if you would, right? And that is a platform that has been around the industry for almost 15, 20 years in getting some lift and participation. But what we've seen in the past 2 years, really more past 6 months, larger members coming on at scale. And the reason that we're super encouraged about it as a bellwether is that I really saw digital adoption almost in three phases. You had call it pre-crisis, pre-pandemic, pre kind of COVID, where a lot of experimentation around how to digitize the loan file, right? So data packages and scanning of docs and OCR and different types of technologies being applied. So a lot of this experimentation really ramping up with a lot of the fintech investments called 2018. The pandemic hits and everybody figures out, how do I do this in a dematerialized basis, right? So then you had a lot of people going into what was hybrid, right? So people trying to figure out, how do I close loans where I can get a number of documents signed remotely? And then the ones that require wet signatures, they had workarounds. I mean, I think people probably want to forget, but we had the drive-by closings, right, of 2021 and different methods by which people were testing out. Running on a parallel track was the emergence of remote online notarization, right? And so that technology really got a lot of lift and adoption, certainly around a state level, in that same time frame. So I would look at that segment, call it a two-year window of just really intense experimentation to deal with the environment that we were met with, right? Post-era, right, drop in volume, you see a lot of the customers who are now recognizing, I need to invest in my new next-gen infrastructure. So call it the third leg. And what I use is really kind of almost, it's really anecdotal, but the way I would look at the difference between pandemic and post and why it's different. When we at MERS would have people come to us about digital adoption, they would say, well, I'm the lead on digital adoption. And I would ask questions. I'd say, do you have budget? No. Do you have executive sponsorship? No. Do you have vendor selections? No, right? So it was somebody was identified within an enterprise with the kind of the digital adoption. What's changed is in the past 6 months, almost a year, we now have these deeply engaging calls with people when we talk to them about this transition. They're saying, yeah, I'm an executive sponsor. I have budget. Here are my vendors. My counterparties are this. So people are coming with a more comprehensive view on how they want to move and make this transition.
What do you think is one of the main barriers that you still see for people, you know, doing eNotes, having digital adoption?
Well, I think it's endemic to the complexity of producing a loan, right? I've heard people describe a loan as a novel written by 14 authors with three editors and, you know, a publisher kind of around the, you know, call publisher investor kind of sitting on the background. But what you have in that case is just a really intense requirement to orchestrate a lot of these activities. So it's a super complex workflow. So I think just the nature of what one, the industry was accustomed to, which people at the closing table were like, nope, I put a stack of paper in front of folks and I sign it. And that was what was the state of the industry. What you saw is a little bit of a breakthrough where people were saying, look, people don't want our 90-minute closing ceremonies, right? They'd rather be able to go in and have a handful of documents that are really critical documents that require wet signatures. So that was the emergence of a hybrid process. And those who have been successful on the journey to fully digital definitely have time in hybrid. It helps them kind of bridge over and learn how they re-engineer their infrastructure. The second piece is investor acceptance, right? So you had the cash windows with both the GSEs have been big buyers of e-notes. E-notes are in large securitizations. They've been reviewed by rating agencies as part of the credit risk transfer transactions. We're currently working with people on private label mortgages. But a lot of it was that the investors needed to understand their vault infrastructure, how they were controlling servicing and post-close events. So that was a little bit of a, not barrier to entry, but more trying to understand how does this scale. And then the last piece I would say of it was more about looking about what are the efficiencies do I get on it? Do I get savings? Do I get better ROI on my investment infrastructure? What kind of training do I need to do to my staff? Because what you had is when we were doing that bridge, you had to run parallel processes, one digital, one kind of analog. And just given the expense, most people said, look, I really can't run these parallel. What we're finding is people who've made the cut over are not looking back.
Really interesting. I know that, you know, one of the maybe difficulties from a lender standpoint is like knowing at the beginning of the loan, how, you know, which way this is going to go, right? Because if you have one workflow that's going this way, one workflow, if it's going to be digital, have we made a lot of progress so that, you know, they can know that going into it?
Well, that's a great observation. And it's a decisioning tree, right? At some point they have to determine what is my takeout? And is my takeout something where it's a best X, where I've got multiple parties, some of whom might not have the digital infrastructure. So therefore I have fewer bidders for my loan. And in that case, then am I losing, I'm giving up on pricing efficiencies to make this decision. I think most of that is going away. What we've heard more recently from a lot of the aggregators, these are intermediaries who are buying loan packages in bulk, are moving more into that infrastructure. And so I think that decision where an LO or somebody who is producing a loan had to pause and say, okay, where is this going to go? Does that make my decision on how I produce the loan seems to diminish. The biggest lift we got over the past 18 months to a year has been Ginnie Mae's digital collateral program. So if you run a large government operation, so if you're doing FHA, VA, those types of loans, the ability to be able to deliver into Ginnie Mae was facilitated by recent changes there. So we saw a big lift on it. Year over year, their volume had doubled. I think it went from 13,000 e-notes to 26 to 54. Now we're at more than 130,000 e-notes. They're going to have changes. This is Ginnie Mae in later this spring, which will allow for the commingling and securities issuance of both digital and paper collateral. That is going to be really interesting to watch because then those constraints we're talking about kind of go away.
No, that's really interesting. And I know that you said that when we were preparing for this, you said that, you know, February, you had the largest production in the month of February as far as the e-registry since you started tracking.
Yeah. So talk about, drill into that number a little bit, right? So the numerator is typically how many e-note registrations we have. Denominator will be how many registrations MERS gets. MERS has deep penetration in the industry, but it isn't all production, right? Some portfolio lenders might not register loans. But for that cohort that is a MERS member, and they are registering on the traditional residential system, but including an e-note, we saw it go up to 8.37%, right? And that was on top of a record in January. So I like my trends like everyone else, but I don't want to call it a trend. We'll see what the numbers are. I looked at them yesterday, actually. And what we're seeing under the hood is scale production. And what I mean by that was, go back to the analogy I used earlier, at least the time frame. You were in a situation where somebody would say, I'm the digital lead, I produced an e-note, I put out a press release, we're done here, right? And so you would see, you know, on an average volume, you might see somebody who went and got a vault and went to the e-note have 5-6 a month. Now what we're seeing is 250, 300 a week from some lenders. And these are IMBs, some of whom you know, some of them are depositories, but a broader cross-section who've gone that route. And so that was what was encouraging, because when you go back under, what you're seeing and what I think is extrapolated from the data is those customers that took this down period where, you know, volume was low and invested in re-engineering their infrastructure are scaling in that capacity.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
You know, so scaling is what it makes it worthwhile. It's where the ROI is. It's where it really becomes something that's helping. Where do you see, like, you don't want to call it a trend yet, but what do you feel like has helped grow those numbers?
Well, I think it's the things I mentioned earlier around, if they're having the Govy program, you're able to go that route. I think it's also customers recognizing where do I want to meet my customer, right? And I want to close my loan if my if it's a remote closing, how do I accommodate them? So, and a good example would be and I'll name names because they're pretty public about it, Navy Federal Credit Union, right? They have members who are around the world, right? Closing loans on, you know, aircraft carriers, right? In the Persian Gulf, things like that. And the ability to be able to provide that digital service, right, independent of location, is real important for them. So I think where they've been able to say, look, this is not only an ROI, but it's kind of strategic, right? We have to meet the customer where they're choosing to. Others are saying, look, we want to have this as an option, right? So maybe some people have high net worth clients, right, that do travel a lot or have intense schedules. We want to be able to meet them remotely. So there's that piece of the business. The other piece of it's really interesting because it's kind of the back end of the process, which is the title companies. And we saw this with Alta did a survey recently. So American Land and Title Association views digital closings a little bit different. I mean, their definitions are slightly different, but for the most part, what they're seeing is people interested in RON, right? So a remote online notarization, and making sure that all those digital requirements, know your customer, ability to be able to detect fraud and be able to ensure that that's not impacting the loan quality. And a lot of those things are starting to kind of converge, right? So on the one hand, it's the capabilities of the back office to be able to support, you know, that business demand, but then also being able to meet the customer where they're at. The last piece is that investor piece. And I think for the most part, the investors are willing to say, okay, you know, we know that e-notes are actionable, and they also help with warehouse lines of credit. So the lines of credit, you can shorten your dwell time. That's valuable too.
So let's talk about RON a little bit, because, you know, obviously, like, during the pandemic, as you said, you know, we didn't have a lot of choice. And so it really pushed adoption there. But at the time, you really had two different camps who people were like, it's less safe than if you're meeting in person, because, like, there's not a human being sitting across from you. Other people are like, it's more safe because we have this, like, you know, video record or digital record, whereas this person could just come in. So how has that evolved since the pandemic, and how people think about the safety of RON and other e-closings?
Well, that's a good question. And I mean, I think you look at it like any of the adoption curves. I mean, if you're a follower of Gartner, right, which is the big IT research firm, you know, they have the trough of despair, right? The technology comes on, everybody gets real excited with the capabilities. We see this kind of excitement around AI now and these other tools, right? And then gets the implementation, right? And business process re-engineering and a lot of the things of really trying to reformulate how processes go. But what Ron has gone through was, it really got obviously spun up and as a result of the pandemic. What I think the last I heard was 47 states have adopted it in some fashion. So what you're starting to see is some standardization, right, across different political constituents. So go back to your scaling comment that you brought up earlier, right? Like we can't create 50 different closing strategies, right, around Laurent. But now the Laurent providers who we work closely with, we created a product at MERS, which allows the notary to store the video at MERS and link it into the loan file. The people who are using that product really like that, right? They're saying digital storage, life of loan events, not really our thing. So can we put this in a spot that if somebody has to go back and review what happened on an event, they're capable of doing that. I think it's a part of, so I think the ideas are, can the standardization be applied across multiple political jurisdictions that are accepting it, right? And ensuring the validity of the asset. The second piece is getting the training. So people who are involved in the different product lines. I think one of the challenges we heard from loan closers and the title companies was with this proliferation of technology. It was very hard 2, 3 years ago, right? I've got to train my closer on 8 different platforms, right? Not going to happen. I'm going to check a preferred vendor and I'm going to really just narrow my scope. I think with a lot of the changes that have occurred on the industry, you've seen people clustering around a few different platforms, and that's going to help again on the scaling, standardization, and general acceptance and adoption.
So, from your perspective, then there's not a fraud problem that is unique to e-closing or to Ron that can't be solved.
You can never say an absolute. I think that as long as there's fraudsters, and we see this in cyber risk, right, there's always going to be a clever people. It's a game of cat and mouse, right? So when you say, hey, can I engage, can I ring fraud out through technology, you can certainly diminish it and kind of box it in. But the same issues, and I use as an analogy, would be if you have people saying, well, I'm worried about my collateral, right? My wet signature e-note. I go, well, you put it in a FedEx box and you shipped it to Memphis and it flew halfway around the world. You weren't worried about losing that package, but yet you're worried about getting an instant email. Okay, so explain to me what are the riskos. So when you think about it ultimately, and I have some experience around risk never goes away, right? At the end of the day, what you try to do is you try to box it in, you try to put your controls around it. I think the ability to be able to ensure that that individual who's closing the loan is representing accurately what they are in their borrowing position. Obviously, it's key to asset quality. But I think these ideas of like location-based assessments and knowing your customer, all these tools have emerged that really allow for a lot higher degree of complexity to actually game the system. So I do, I, you know, I, so I think. I wouldn't say fraud is a red herring, but if you think about that, and FBI's got some statistics on it, maybe less than 3%, maybe 2% of loan production, should that tail be wagging the dog for adoption? I think the answer is no.
Really interesting. Well, let's talk about compliance, right? So, you've got on one hand, you've got the risk that's from outside players. On the other hand, what does the compliance landscape look like right now for, digital adoption? Like, what are people worried about? What's coming down?
Well, I think, look, go back to the factor of why mortgage production is so complex. And a lot of it is the overlay of different state, federal, programmatic requirements, right? So you have, go back to the analogy I use, not only do you have all those editors, you have a grammarian, right, sitting behind you saying, hey, you wrote that incorrectly, or that wasn't right, or wasn't represented. The compliance environment obviously got radically changed post Dodd-Frank, right? And there was a lot of implementations, TRID and those pieces. And I think the industry digested that. I think the bigger issues and the new frontier in terms of compliance is around consumer privacy, right? We've seen adoption of consumer privacy laws in Europe. I think some of those are starting to cascade over to states. And go back to my Ron analogy. If you have a patchwork or a quilt work of 50 different state requirements around compliance, it really makes it hard to scale. So when you have policy leaders who are saying, well, why does it cost so much to produce a loan? And you say, well, the risk of not getting it correct because of all these different rules and regulations and overlays are so high, a purchase buyback, right? So literally a customer having to buy a loan back from an investor are so high, I need to have the checker check the checker to check the checker. I think the promise of digital is you have a lot of automation that can do those things. So you get higher velocity, you get more confidence around the data quality. And so we try to, you know, encourage people to go that route and say, yes, is there ancillary risks that might emerge on that, right, in terms of uptime and operations? But overall, the benefits are really good, certainly from compliance checks. We have a number of different compliance tools that we run through, big rules engines. Those things are intensely organic. They're constantly being reviewed by a series of attorneys. The attorneys are interpreting them. They put them into business rules. So I think that's an immense value to the LO who's saying, I don't really want that. The compliance officer, obviously, it's their responsibility. They don't have to sit there and say, I've got to reconcile, say, a Virginia rule with a federal requirement with an agency change, right? But that's part of what we try to take the guesswork out.
So, you know, let's talk a little bit about how technology helps you there. So I'm interviewing tech executives every week, and, you know, so many of them are leveraging AI in new ways. Of course, you know, in our industry, AI is, you know, depending on how you want to interpret it, people have been using AI in back systems. You know, it's running a lot of things for a long time, but we have seen a pretty big uptick in the last year of some different use cases for it. So from your perspective, you know, how is MERS, how is ICE using AI to solve some of these problems?
Well, I think just to be clear, we're somewhat constrained in terms of trying to reference AI. And the reason I say that is just think about it as a really big concept. AI, machine learning, these are new technologies. Well, and you'd even argue not as necessarily new, things like neural nets and other areas that were, call it self-referential or, you know, machine, when you say machine learning, reciprocal loops where the algorithm improves with time and input. So this is a huge concept, right? The question is how does it find its way into a specific use case? And I think the bigger challenge is going back to what I talked about earlier, like if everything was standardized, right, across the whole loan production process, it'd be a lot easier to apply these tools. But there's so much exception handling, certainly too, around borrowers. I mean, think about the asset, right? And ICE knows this because we're active in the, let's call the New York Stock Exchange, right? Use as an example. In order to trade stock, I need to know price, and I need to know ticker symbol, right? And different execution protocols, pretty simple, right? So you can do it at high volume. We match and do trades, 80 million, hundreds of millions a day, right? In the loan production process, the complexity of being able to apply scalable technology is different because, you know, you'll say, well, you know, this pay stub didn't come out on the OCR correctly, right? So I'd have to step into it. I think there's immense promise there. And I think go back to my Gartner analogy, right? Like we're in the ramp of excitement, right? All these applications and all these, but over time, I think what's going to happen is people are going to sleuth out to say, this technology is going to help in this discrete decision process, right? It'll accelerate things. And that's where really the rubber hits the road. And I think there's an, you know, like everyone else, we're super excited about it, where it could wring out inefficiencies, automate different processes. But I go back to, I can do that when the package is digital. If I have to transfer the analog written content and literally have people reading documents and doing stare and compare, which everybody knows that is an historical perspective, when we go to dematerialization, to me, that's a precursor step to any of these automated tools. And we're getting there.
So Chris, let me ask you, you know, we've been talking about what, you know, what's been in the past, what's right now, what's in the present. Let's talk a little bit about the future. Like, what are some of the exciting future that could be here around this adoption, digital adoption? When, you know, what's the big picture? What do you see coming?
Well, I think I see a convergence called or a confluence of various technologies and an environment where the consumer interest in terms of having flexibility and as well as the investor interest in being able to have a really good actionable asset that they've acquired, all combining as we move into this new kind of total technology environment. The industry's been challenged, we know, down with production for a number of years. So there's been a lot of people saying, what does the future look like? And I think the future has a lot of reimagining how we produce loans, in large part trying to figure out how we might shorten that time period between, you know, call it 30, 45, maybe 60, even upwards of 90 days to a shorter time frame, but not trading off loan quality, right? So, and you know, this comes into focus on a raising rate environment, right? I quote a rate and I want to get that loan closed because my investor's expecting a coupon at a certain rate, and as those rates increase. So people really realize the challenge of improving velocity in an environment. So I think, but the future would have higher velocity, higher turnover, more capital efficiency as a result. So I'm not tying up my loan lines of credit. But again, not trading off loan quality. So I have automated engines ensuring and double checking source records, right? I'm going to source records. I have very clear and visible audit trails in the event that there is questions about asset production. I can go back, I can go, okay, well, this source was that data, that was that data. We talked a little earlier about fraud, trying to ring out fraud. And then I think that the benefit is, look, we've all been trained by somebody like an Amazon, right? With the one click. I always love the story about, you know, Jeff Bezos. I think he challenged his engineers and they came back and they were like, hey, we've got this great new way of doing the cart. And he was like, you have two clicks. And he just kept on going, one click, one click. Right. So challenging the people to make it simpler and cleaner. And I think that's the challenge that's being presented to the industry, right? To be able to create that kind of sense of ease, right? But not, again, trading off understanding the weight and the obligation that the borrower has, the investor feeling more confident and understanding when it acquires a loan, not a lot of risk in that. Or if it is, I'm immediately detecting that and remedying it. So I think you have this image too of where the production with a smaller group of people are being a lot more efficient. So I think the cost structure of production also goes down, right? So cost, and then you have a policy objective, right? You see this whole new cohort wanting to get into home ownership. And I just saw a tool when I was at Experience where people can kind of look into their pipeline and say, I can quickly determine a first-time home buyer program that might help my borrower qualify. So the convergence of this would really make loan production as simple as any of the other processes we're accustomed as a consumer, even though it's probably, and as we all know, the largest purchase people will ever make. And also too, recognize that over time, the industry will move into more of a standards, right? And there'll be different products. There always are for different use cases, but I think the scalability will emerge. The technology will be more confident, right? And we can feel that we can invest more in the technology because it's delivering. And then again, the consumer and the LO experience, right? LO wants to get higher velocity in production, right? Wants to know its team has got its backside. So I think all those things will converge and really create a different borrowing experience in the future.
I love that future view. Thanks for sharing that. And thanks for being on today and kind of just giving us the whole scope about digital adoption. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, no, I appreciate the time, Sarah, and don't hesitate. And I certainly can share any of the data we discussed with you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.